Hi, I'm Andrew Connell, and in this screencast, we're going to do a deep dive into security and OAuth. Before we begin, let's look at the developer vision for the Office 365 development. It boils down to both users and data. What do I mean by users? Users want to be able to work with their devices and interact with all of their information using custom applications or some of the applications that have been provided by Microsoft, such as the Office clients as Word, Excel, Outlook, and PowerPoint, as well as custom applications that developers build. They want to work with them in a familiar environment with familiar user interfaces. For developers, we want to be able to build custom applications using a multitude of different platforms, from working in a mobile experience to working off a server-side product, or something that's working on the desktop, or even just a standard web page. We want to be able to get to all of our data and provide these really good experiences for our users. We're first going to take a look at the Azure Active Directory, and then we'll do an OAuth primer. We'll look at some development scenarios and different OAuth flows. Let's first start with Azure Active Directory. Azure Active Directory is a comprehensive identity and access management cloud solution. It combines core directory services, advanced identity governance, security, and application access management. Azure AD also offers developers an identity management platform to deliver access control to their applications based on a centralized policy and rules. An organizational account is an extension of your computer network that someone from your organization, typically an administrator from your IT department, sets up with Microsoft to provide your users with access to paid web services or applications hosted in the cloud. From the administrator, to provide access to the users, they must first create individual user accounts in Azure Active Directory, otherwise known as Azure AD, to specify which licensed services the user can access, and then assign each person their individual user ID and password so they can sign into the services for which they have been assigned licenses to. User accounts stored in Azure AD are referred to as organization accounts. It is not required to link Office 365 directory to an Azure subscription for simply creating a provider-hosted add-in. However, it does make life a little bit easier, and it opens up the ability to call into the Office 365 from other applications. Let's look and see how user authentication works in Azure AD. We have the users on the left, we have SharePoint Online at the top, and then we have Azure AD at the bottom. The user is first going to attempt to access a SharePoint Online resource, but because he's not authenticated yet, SharePoint is going to redirect him back to logon.microsoftonline.com. The user will then go over to Azure AD, which is where that URL is, and will log in with their organizational account. Once they successfully log in, they'll be issued a SAML token. The token will then be presented by the user back to SharePoint, and then SharePoint will return back what's called a fed-off cookie. The user will submit subsequent requests that use the fed-off cookie for the authentication. That's how user authentication works. So let's look at the OAuth primer. OAuth provides a simple mechanism for end users to grant third-party access to their data and resources without sharing their passwords. It also enables the user to grant access limited by scope and duration. Let's look at a couple different actors with OAuth 2. The client is an application making the request to access protected resources on behalf of the resource owner and with its authorization. This role is defined independently from how it is implemented. It has the same meaning whether it is implemented as an application that executes on a server computer, a desktop computer, or a mobile device. The resource owner is an entity capable of granting access to a protected resource. Usually this is the end user granting access to, say, something like their mailbox in exchange. The resource server is a server hosting the protected resource of the resource owner, capable of accepting and responding to API requests using access tokens. This would be like Exchange Online. The authorization server is the server issuing the access tokens to the client after successfully authenticating the resource owner and obtaining authorization. This would be Azure AD. Now let's look at the OAuth 2 actors in Office 365. The client is going to be either your SharePoint add-in, your Azure web application, or your Windows 8 application. The resource owner is the individual or the administrator with an organizational account in Azure AD. The resource server could be SharePoint Online, Exchange Online, etc. The authorization server is the Azure Access Control Service, or ACS. So what about the applications? What kind of principles do we have here? Well, just like a user has a username and a password, an application has a username and password, but we give them different names. The client ID is what we use, is what we refer to as the username for an app. It's the unique identifier for an application. It also has a password, and we call that the secret. So the client's secret is shared between the app and the authorization server. This forms the basis for add-ins as first-class principles. In the OAuth 2 model, access to protected resources is done using an access token. This is an object with a specific scope, lifetime, and a couple other access attributes. OAuth access tokens are sometimes compared to valet keys. In the same way that a valet key gives restricted access to a car, allowing a valet to drive it but not open the trunk or the glove compartment. The access token allows a client application restricted access to a user's data at a resource server via tokens issued by the authorization server in response to the user authorizing access. With OAuth 2, a third-party application does not use the resource owner's credentials to access protected resources. Instead, the third-party application obtains an access token. Access tokens are issued to third-party clients by an authorization server with the approval of the resource owner. The client uses the access token to access the protected resources hosted by the resource server. Bearer tokens are the tokens that we use to access the different resources. OAuth 2 access tokens are unbound tokens. In other words, they're called bearer tokens. An access token can be used by any application that possesses it. You can think of this as almost like currency or cash. It doesn't matter how you got the money. If you walk into a store to go buy something, you just have to have the money, even if it's yours or someone else's. You always use SSL. OAuth design principles depend on it. You should never pass an access token over the wire using an unsecured connection. You should never expose an access token in JavaScript or allow them to be accessed by client-side debugging tools. If an access token is compromised, damage can be limited because access tokens are generally have a short lifetime. If a refresh token is compromised, damage is limited because the client ID and secret are required to get an access token from a refresh token. So you would not only have to have the access token, but you'd also have to have the refresh token and you'd have to have the client ID and secret to reobtain it. Let's look at some development scenarios with OAuth. We'll first look at provider-hosted apps. Apps are first-class principles in SharePoint, and they have an identifier and permissions, which are tracked by SharePoint through the registration and installation process. We have a client ID that's generated during the registration process, a secret that's generated during the registration process, the domain where the app is going to be hosted. On the slide, it shows an Azure website is hosting the app, but it really could be any website. We also have a redirect URL. Now, this is going to be where the user is going to be redirected to once they grant the permissions to the app. SharePoint provides three different registration management pages. AppRegNew.aspx is going to be used for registering a new app. AppInv.aspx is used for updating registered apps. And AppPrinciples.aspx lists all the registered apps. What about registering a new app? Well, this is the AppRegNew.aspx page. Here we can specify either a client ID and secret, or we can click the generate buttons to create one. The title is the URL that's going to be, or is the name of the app that's going to show up in the UI. The app domain is the URL where the app resides, and the redirect URI is where the URL of the full URL of where the homepage app of the app should be. Now, provider-hosted apps, let's talk about what their authorization flow is going to look like. The user is going to have an organization account. The app is then going to be registered with SharePoint Online and deployed the app will be deployed to SharePoint Online, but that's just really, it's more registered with SharePoint Online. The app is not actually deployed inside of SharePoint Online, or at least the website's not. The remote web part of the application, it will be deployed to some place where websites can reside. In this case here, like an Azure web app. And then you'll have a client ID and secret that's defined inside of Azure AD. So let's look at how the flow works. We have the end user over on the left-hand side. We have Azure ACS on the right-hand side. We have the website where the actual app is going to reside up top. And then we have SharePoint Online at the bottom. So what the user is going to do is first request to launch the app at SharePoint Online. SharePoint is going to request a context token from Azure ACS, obtain that token, and return that back to the user. The user is then going to be redirected over to the actual application. The application can then extract a refresh token from the context token. You can think of the context token almost like SharePoint's calling card, so the app knows how to get back into SharePoint. But let's say the app needs to go do something inside of SharePoint, like make some requests. To do that, it's going to need an access token. And to do that, it's going to use its client ID and secret to authenticate with Azure ACS and obtain an access token and/or a refresh token. If it had already received an access token, then it can use the refresh token to get an updated one. Azure ACS will authenticate the request and then hand the application back an access token. And then the application can then talk to the SharePoint APIs by passing along the access token with the request to prove that the application has been authenticated. SharePoint will then respond to the request, which could do really anything, such as pull data back from a SharePoint list and show that data on a page. Now we have a class called the SharePoint ACS Context class. This inherits the SharePoint Context class, and it provides specific properties and methods for dealing with the context and the API and the access tokens. We have a couple different options for CSOM, and we have a couple different options for REST. The big difference here is that with the CSOM ones, that's going to return back a client context, and the client context is the center of gravity for all of our CSOM operations. For REST, we only really need an access token. So what the client context does, or what the CSOM ones do, is they go obtain an access token using one of the different methods that you, or the different options that you see listed here, and it will then assign that access token to the client object model, or the client context, and return back the client context. For the REST options, because we're not using a client context with REST, and because we're managing everything ourselves and we're managing all the HTTP plumbing ourselves, we just need to get an access token. So let's take a look at making REST calls with OAuth. So we've gone and we are gonna from our provider hosted app, we're gonna use the SharePoint ACS context and get a context passing in the current HTTP context for the current page. That's gonna give us our SP context object. Using that, we can get an access token from the SharePoint site that we came from, or the SP host object. So here you can see I'm actually creating the authorization header with a value of bearer, space, and then the access token. And then I can make the request to go get the title for the current SharePoint site. We can do the same thing using the CSOM. Here you see the difference is that on the SharePoint context, I'm saying create a user client context using the SharePoint host. Under the covers, that obtains the access token, creates an instance of the client context, assigns the access token to every single request that's going to be submitted using the client object model, and then it will hand that back and assign it to the client context object. And from there, I can go get the title of the current SharePoint site. Now, another scenario is working with Office 365 APIs. In this scenario, the user is going to have an organization account, an application is deployed to some web server, in this case here an Azure web app, and the application is not going to require any kind of a special permission grant. So let's look at how this flow works. The user is going to go to our application. When he goes to the application is going to notice that he's not authenticated, and so it's going to redirect the user over to Azure AD to authenticate. That's going to present the user with a consent dialog to say, go ahead and log in. And once they've logged in, is then going to say, do you want to grant this application access to whatever resource? Let's just say it's our email inside of Exchange Online. I'm going to grant the application access to Azure AD, and Azure AD is going to remember that this specific application has been granted access to this person's email, Azure AD will then return an authorization code back to the end user, and the end user will then go back to the Azure website and give it the authorization code. But the key thing here is that the user is not providing their password into whatever resource that they're going into. The authorization code is then used by the website to call Azure AD to exchange it for an access token. Now that access token is going to be granted based on the ID and the secret. The app ID and secret will establish that application, his identity with Azure AD, and the authorization code is going to establish it with that current user. Azure AD will look and say, does this application have access to that person's, let's just say again, their mail, or we're using SharePoint Online here, so we'll just say to that person's information in the SharePoint list. If so, it'll create an access token and a refresh token and hand it back to the application. And the application can then use that information to talk to SharePoint Online or Exchange Online or any of the other Office 365 APIs. That access token will be trusted by SharePoint Online because it came from Azure Active Directory, which is trusted by SharePoint Online. And so it will then respond with the information that came from it. Now, at the heart of the Office 365 APIs is something called the Discovery Service. The discovery service is going to allow you to locate a resource that you want to utilize. It's going to automatically determine the URL of different Office 365 services that not only are available, but you have permissions to as well. It supports device app and website flows for OAuth authentication. It's secured using Azure AD for authentication. It serves information stored about the services in Azure AD as well. Now we have three different objects that we can take advantage of for the Office 365 APIs. We have a graph client, the Azure AD graph client, and this is the API that you would use to talk to Azure AD and find out all the information about users and groups within your directory. You have the Exchange client, which is used to talk to calendar, contacts, and mail, and the SharePoint client is used to talk to files in OneDrive for Business. This code sample here is a common one that you would end up implementing in almost all of your projects. So we have a method here called ensure client created. And in this case here, we're going to be getting an Exchange client. Now within this, we're using the discovery context. So we're having an instance of the discovery context. We're getting a reference to it. If we don't already have it, we're going to go ahead and create it. And then we're going to use the discovery context to query for a specific service resource ID. So we don't see that defined here, but let's just say that that's going to be the endpoint for the SharePoint API, or in this case here, the Exchange API. So here, I'm going to say discover resource async in the third highlighted piece, and that's going to give us something called a discovery context request. I'm then going to go create an instance of the Exchange client. I'm going to pass in the ID to the service that I want to talk to, and then I'm going to get the access token. And I'm going to do that by calling the discovery context authentication context dot acquire token by refresh token async. Now another development scenario is to create something called an OAuth controller. The OAuth controller should be used in scenarios where you need to customize how tokens are handled. For instance, you may want to save them in a database and make them available across all sessions. There's a code sample available on GitHub that you can see here to make it easy to create your own controller. So let's talk a little bit about how this controller would work. It's very similar to what we've already seen. The user is going to have an organization account. The app will be deployed as an Azure website. The app will be registered with Azure AD. It'll have a client ID and secret, and then permissions will be granted specifically in Azure AD. So first up, the user is going to go to the application. The application is going to notice the user is not authenticated and or the application has not been granted access to the user's information. So the user will be redirected over to Azure AD, where they're going to go log in. Once they log in, they'll be granted an authorization code and sent back over to that you can take over to the Azure website. The consent form is not going to be utilized when permissions are explicitly granted in Azure AD. So for example, I may have had an administrator go in and grant this user access to, or this application access to, this user's mailbox or information in SharePoint. In the previous example, someone had not done that, and so the user had to grant access. The user is then going to take that authorization code, redirect them back over to the Azure website, where the website will then authenticate with Azure AD using his ID and secret. He'll then pass the auth code, which establishes the current person. Azure AD will check to see if the application has permissions for that user's resource based on the auth code that was passed in and based on the action the user just did by logging in. If so, it'll return an access token and a refresh token back to the application, which will then be used to query SharePoint Online or one of the other resources in Office 365. Once that access token has been validated, it'll then build out the results that are based on the request that was made and hand that back to the Azure website. So what does an OAuth controller look like? So here's an example here where we're going and creating an OAuth controller. We've created a controller, and we're going to get an access token from cache, or we're going to get a refresh token. So I'm passing in a tenant ID and a SharePoint service root. Now, where is this coming from? We don't really know. We don't see the implementation here, but we could be saving it in cache, either in a database or in session state, or maybe even if we're using Azure, we could use something like Redis cache. If the access token is equal to null, then we're going to redirect the user back to the homepage of the site, and we're going to get the authorization URL, and then redirect the user over back to the authorization to the redirect URL on where we want them to be authenticated to. Now there's another way that we can, another flow that's available to us called the authorization code flow. And this is going to use what's called client credentials. Let me say that again. Now, we've talked about a couple different kinds of flows here. And one of the ones you've heard me reference is something called the authorization code. Let's look at two different flows that are supported. One is called the authorization code flow, and one is a client credential flow. Now, we want to be able to obtain access tokens with auth flows, and we've kind of skipped over that a little bit so far in this module. The way you're going to obtain an access token is using a different flow or an OAuth flow that's defined in the OAuth spec. Multiple flows are defined in the OAuth 2 spec. Both the issuer and the resource must support the flow in order to use it. We have three different flows that are available to us in Office 365 and Azure AD. One's called the auth code flow, one's called the client credential flow, that's also referred to as app only, and the other one is called implicit. So let's look at the three of these. The authorization code flow is going to be the most common one that you're familiar with. It's very secure. And what happens is the application redirects the user over to Azure AD to authenticate. The Azure AD, once the user authenticates, will then issue the user an auth code. That auth code will then be that the user will take that and hand it over to the application. The application then uses that auth code to obtain an access token on behalf of the user. This is very secure because the application that some developer has created never gets the user's credentials. It only gets an authorization code, and that code is only valid for a few minutes. So what happens is the web application is going to redirect the user to Azure AD to log in. Once the user successfully logs in, Azure AD will redirect the user back to the web app and include an authorization code in the response. The web app uses that code to request access to the token on behalf of the user. So good examples of this are web applications that use federated logins, or when there is user interaction that's going to be present here. The other option is a client credential flow, otherwise known as app only. Now it's very powerful, and it's kind of like that joke that goes around where with great power comes great responsibility. It's going to require global tenant administration for consenting apps to do this. Users can't consent this because it's a very wide-ranging thing. Essentially what happens is an app is going to be configured with a public part of a certificate. The app will then submit an encrypted request to the issuer, Azure AD, requesting an access token. Azure AD will then grant an access or create an access token and hand it back to the requester, because it can tell that the application has, one, already been established his identity using a certificate, and then two, it will have already been granted access to the endpoint by the tenant administrator. There's no user that has to log in for this. There's nothing that has to happen. So some good scenarios for this are when there's zero user interaction, for example, a service or a daemon process, and when you want to have app-only rights. You don't want the user to have rights or any user involvement here. In this module, we took a look at Azure Active Directory and then did a little primer on OAuth. We then looked at multiple development scenarios and finally looked at the different OAuth flows that are supported by Azure AD and Office 365. Microsoft offers multiple ways to get in touch with them and also to stay up to date on what's going on. One of the things is the Developer Program Watch. What the Developer Program is all about is allowing you to sign up and get email newsletters, free developer subscription to Office 365, which will give you a 1 year free to a Office 365 tenant, free training, free tools, and free webinars that they'll publish on a periodic basis. Using this developer program, you'll be able to stay in touch and up to date with all the latest and greatest offers and news and updates coming out of Office 365 and Office development. You can sign up for it at dev.office.com/devprogram. The Office team also provides multiple ways for you to sign up and to stay in touch with what's going on. From the Office 365 network and Yammer, to staying in touch on Twitter using the Office Dev handle, you can also ask questions on Stack Overflow using the tag ms-office. We have multiple podcasts as well. If you go to dev.office.com to sign up for different podcasts, such as the Office 365 Developer Podcasts. In Channel 9, there's a developer show as well, the Office 365 Developer Show, that comes out on a weekly basis. You can also find out about a bunch of different quick demos. You can find those at YouTube if you go to aka.ms/0365devsnackdemos. And then finally, do you have feedback for the team? Do you have ideas for new features? Do you have changes that you'd like to see implemented? Submit them on User Voice by going to officespdev.uservoice.com, where you can submit your ideas, and then you can also vote on other people's ideas and provide comments to the team. The engineering team looks at these issues on a periodic basis and a regular periodic basis and triages them to look to improve them and add things to the product going forward. Thank you very much for taking a few minutes of your time to watch this screencast.